Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. We are jumping headfirst into the mind of a thinker who is, well, arguably one of the most cited in history, yet somehow profoundly misunderstood, Thomas Aquinas.
That's right. And today, we're really leaning on the work of Fergus Kerr.
Yes, Kerr. He argues that this 13th century intellectual giant isn't just, you know, relevant.
He says he's necessary. Necessary for understanding modern life.
That's a pretty bold claim.
It is, but Kerr makes a compelling case. You hear Aquinas, and maybe you think of, like, dusty books and complicated logic.
Yeah, something like that. Abstract.
But Kerr unveils this breathtaking synthesis, a unified vision that connects, well, everything, the whole structure of human existence.
Okay, so our mission today
is to unpack that vision.
Yeah.
Quickly but thoroughly. We want to really get into his integration of reason and faith.
Nature and grace, too, right? That connection.
Exactly. That essential link.
So why should we, the eternally curious, care about a Dominican friar from 800 years ago?
Because he tackled the big ones. The foundational human questions that honestly still challenge us today.
Like what?
Like, how do we know what's real? How do we find our ultimate purpose?
And crucially, how should we live, you know, ethically, to find real lasting happiness?
Precisely. He aimed for answers to all of that.
Okay, before we dive deeper into Aquinas, let's talk about our guide, Fergus Kerr. Why is his take so insightful?
Well, Kerr himself is quite distinguished. He's a Dominican friar, like Aquinas.
Oh, interesting. Same order.
Exactly. And he's a highly respected scholar. Medieval philosophy, theology, taught at top places. His work is known for its rigor.
So that Dominican connection gives him a special angle.
It really does. Kerr calls it an insider's perspective.
Yeah.
He's not just studying history from the outside.
He's part of that living tradition.
Right. He understands the, let's say, spiritual engine driving the intellectual machine Aquinas built.
So he sees beyond the logic chopping.
That's Kerr's whole goal, really. To rescue Aquinas from that caricature, the dry, abstract rationalist.
Ah!
He wants us to see Aquinas as a living intellectual companion. A theologian whose massive system wasn't just an academic exercise.
Yeah, had a purpose.
A deep spiritual mission.
Yeah.
Helping people understand their path to, well, fulfillment.
All right, let's get into the core of Kerr's argument about Aquinas himself. What was his primary identity, according to Kerr?
First and foremost, Kerr insists Aquinas was a Christian theologian, a spiritual teacher.
And philosophy, Aristotle, all that complex stuff.
A tool. A very sophisticated one, yes, but still a tool. The famous handmaiden of theology.
Interesting. So philosophy served theology.
That's the hierarchy Kerr presents. And the context here is absolutely vital.
Well, the 13th century? What was going on?
It was a time of huge intellectual ferment. Aristotle's works were flooding back into Europe.
How?
Often through brilliant Arabic translations and commentaries from scholars like Averroes.
And Aristotle's philosophy, it's very different, isn't it? More worldly, based on observation.
Exactly. It offered this powerful, rational way of understanding the universe that didn't seem to need faith.
So a challenge to Christian thought.
A massive challenge.
Yeah.
A potential crisis. But Aquinas didn't see it just as a threat.
He saw an opportunity.
A huge one. Instead of rejecting this powerful new way of thinking,
he decided to integrate it.
He used it to build arguably the most comprehensive intellectual system in Western history.
Wow. And Kerr outlines the sheer scope of it.
Oh, yeah. It's staggering. Yeah. Kerr describes it as a journey through all of existence.
Starting where?
Starting with God's nature, God's existence, then moving through creation.
Okay.
Then diving deep into human nature, the whole body-soul question.
Right.
And then building out from there into ethics, virtue, law, justice, the whole package.
It really is a grand synthesis. Where should we start unpacking it? Maybe with the man himself?
Good idea. His personal story actually sets the stage quite dramatically.
Yeah, I read about that. There was some family drama, wasn't there?
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Aquinas came from a noble Italian family, landed gentry.
And they had plans for him.
Definitely. They wanted him in the Benedictine order, prestigious, established, safe.
But he chose differently.
He chose the Dominicans, who were new, radical, itinerant preachers focused on study and engaging the world.
That didn't go over well.
Not at all. His family was furious. They actually kidnapped him, locked him up for about a year, trying to change his mind.
Seriously? They imprisoned him?
Yep. Shows his conviction, though, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And he had good training.
He studied under Albert the Great, one of the sharpest minds of the era. But even so, his project.
Integrating Aristotle?
Yeah, integrating this pagan philosopher into Christian theology. It was seen as deeply controversial, even dangerous by many.
A real revolutionary, then.
In his own quiet, systematic way, yes.
Okay, so this revolutionary approach led him to rethink how we know things, right? His theory of knowledge, abstraction.
Yes, abstraction. It sounds technical, maybe, but Kerr highlights it as absolutely key.
Why is it so important?
Because it's a middle path. Aquinas is trying to avoid two extremes.
Which are?
On one side, pure rationalism ideas just floating free, disconnected from reality. On the other, crude empiricism, only trusting direct sense experience, unable to grasp universals.
So abstraction bridges that gap.
Exactly. The intellect starts with sensory experience. You see this dog, that dog, another dog.
Right.
And from those particular experiences, it abstracts the universal concept, dogness, the essence.
So we move from the concrete to the universal idea.
Right. It grounds our knowledge in reality, but allows for universal truths.
And this way of knowing, it leads him to arguments for God's existence, the famous five ways.
It does. But here, Kerr flags a really common misunderstanding.
We learn them in philosophy class, maybe, as proofs.
Yeah, and we often think of them as, like, mathematical proofs, designed to force belief, QED.
But that's not what Aquinas intended.
Kerr argues, no, they aren't scientific proofs in that modern sense. They're philosophical demonstrations.
What's the difference?
They start from observable reality. Things move, things are caused, things exist contingently.
Things we can see.
Right. And from those observations, Aquinas argues logically for the necessity of an unmoved mover, an uncaused cause, a necessary being.
So they show belief is reasonable.
Profoundly reasonable. Mm-hmm. They point towards God as the necessary ground of all this reality we experience. But they don't compel faith, like 2 + 2 = 4.
That's a crucial distinction.
Yeah.
And it leads to his definition of God, which is, well, it's famously difficult.
Ipsum esse subsistens.
Right. The sheer act of being itself, what does that even mean?
This is maybe the deepest part of his metaphysics, and Kerr really emphasizes it. God isn't just a being, even the biggest or most powerful being.
Okay.
God is being itself. The very act of existing, self-subsistent.
How does that help?
It gets around the who created God problem. God isn't another link in the chain of things that exist. God is the source of the chain.
The foundation.
The radical source and condition for any existence whatsoever. Everything else depends on God's act of being for its own existence moment to moment. It shifts the whole conversation.
Okay, that's profound. Let's shift from God to us, humans. How did Aquinas see human nature? You mentioned body and soul.
Yes, and here he challenges a lot of our modern intuitions, which tend towards dualism mind separate from body.
Like a ghost in a machine.
Exactly. Aquinas, following Aristotle, adopts hylomorphism.
Hylo what?
Hylomorphism, from the Greek, hyle matter and morpheth form. It means a human being is a fundamental unity.
A unity of?
Of a material body and a spiritual soul.
Huh.
But the soul isn't trapped in the body. The soul is the form of the body.
The form, like the shit.
More like the organizing, animating principle. It's what makes this lump of matter a living human being, this specific person.
So my body isn't just a vehicle.
Not at all. It's essential to who you are as a human. Our physical existence is part of our nature, not an accident or a prison.
That integrated view must affect how he sees our purpose, right?
Absolutely. For Aquinas, every human action, consciously or not, is aimed towards some perceived good.
Towards happiness.
Towards what he calls beatitudo. It gets translated as happiness or blessedness, but Kerr stresses it's much richer than just feeling good.
Okay, what is it then?
It's true, deep, lasting fulfillment. The ultimate flourishing of the human person in all aspects of their nature.
And where is that found?
Ultimately, Aquinas argues, it's only found in union with God, the ultimate good, what he calls the beatific vision.
Seeing God face to face, basically.
That's the idea. So the whole moral life isn't about just following rules to get points.
It's about
aligning our choices, our habits, our very being with that ultimate end, that true fulfillment.
Which brings us to virtue ethics.
Exactly. Since our goal is fulfillment through becoming good people, the focus shifts to character.
Not just actions, but who we are.
Right. The moral life is about cultivating stable habits, virtues that dispose us to act well consistently.
Like the cardinal virtues, prudence, justice.
Prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance. Yes. If you cultivate the virtue of justice, you don't need a rule for every single fair interaction. You have an inner disposition to act justly.
It becomes part of you.
It shapes who you are. And this requires both the intellect and the will working together.
How so?
The intellect identifies what is good in a situation, what's the prudent thing to do, what does justice demand.
Okay.
But identifying the good isn't enough. The will has to choose it, to desire it, and move towards it.
So you need both, knowing the good and choosing the good.
Inseparable in any truly moral act. And this integrated view of the human person informs his politics too, his theory of law.
Right, that famous hierarchy. Let's walk through that. It starts at the top with
eternal law, which is basically God's rational plan, God's wisdom ordering the entire universe.
Okay, the divine blueprint.
Pretty much. Then participating in that is natural law.
And natural law is?
It's humanity's rational participation of the eternal law. It's our innate ability, through reason, to grasp the fundamental principles needed for human flourishing.
Things we can figure out just by thinking about our nature.
Yes. Things like preserve life, seek truth, live in society, educate offspring. Basic inclinations towards good that reason discerns as moral imperatives.
And crucially, this is accessible through reason alone, not just faith.
That's key. It means there's a basis for morality grounded in shared human nature, discoverable by anyone. It allows for cross-cultural moral dialogue.
Okay, eternal law, natural law, then what?
Then comes human law. These are the specific positive laws made by governments in particular societies.
Like traffic laws or contract laws.
Exactly. Their purpose is to apply the general principles of natural law to concrete circumstances and enforce them for the common good.
But they have to be based on natural law.
They should be. And this leads directly to that really powerful political statement.
The one about unjust laws.
Yes. An unjust law is not a law at all, but a perversion of law.
That hits hard, even today.
It does. Because it anchors legality in morality. It says power and enforcement aren't enough. Law must aim at justice and the common good, reflecting that deeper natural law to be truly legitimate.
Okay, that's a great overview of the system. Let's pull out some key themes Kerr really wants us to take away. The first big one seems to be reason and faith.
Absolutely central. This is maybe Aquinas's greatest legacy, summed up in the principle. Grace does not destroy nature, but perfects it. Faith, grace, and reason, nature, are not enemies. They come from the same source, God, who is truth itself.
So they can't ultimately contradict each other.
Right. Grace builds upon and elevates our natural capacities, including reason. It doesn't abolish them. This directly counters that modern assumption of inevitable conflict between, say, science and religion.
Very relevant. Okay, second theme.
Natural law as a universal moral foundation.
We touched on this, the idea that basic morality is discoverable through reason based on our shared human nature.
Exactly. This provides a framework for talking about ethics that isn't dependent on specific revelations or cultural codes.
You mentioned human rights earlier.
Yes. Thinkers later drew heavily on this Thomistic idea of natural law when developing concepts of universal human rights grounded in inherent human dignity.
Makes sense. Third theme.
A teleological and good creation.
Teleological meaning?
Purposeful. Directed towards an end or goal. Telos. For Aquinas, the universe isn't random or meaningless.
It has an order.
It's fundamentally ordered, has inherent purposes, and is intrinsically good because it flows from a good and rational creator.
That feels quite different from some modern views. More optimistic.
Definitely. It offers a meaning-imbued worldview, a counterpoint to views that see existence as just matter in motion or fundamentally absurd.
Okay, and one more theme.
Philosophical dialogue is mutually enriching.
You mean how he engaged with Aristotle?
Yes, and not just Aristotle. His serious, respectful, yet critical engagement with Greek philosophy, with Islamic thinkers like Averroes and Avicenna, with Jewish thinkers like Maimonides.
He didn't just dismiss them because they weren't Christian?
No. He sought truth wherever it could be found. He rigorously analyzed their arguments, adopted what was true, critiqued what wasn't. Kerr presents this as a model for productive dialogue today.
Engaging respectfully, even with very different perspectives.
Yes. Intellectual honesty demanded it.
Aquinas' writing can be dense, but Kerr points out some lines that really distill his thought, right? Memorable quotes.
Absolutely. They pack a lot of punch.
Give us the first one.
We've already mentioned it, but it's foundational. Grace does not destroy nature, but perfects it.
Sums up that whole integration project.
Perfectly. God elevates, he doesn't erase our humanity.
Okay, what's another one?
This one's about method, about thinking carefully. A small error in the beginning is a great one in the end.
Ooh, I like that. Get the foundations right.
Precisely. It applies to building an argument, a business, maybe even a life. sloppy premises lead to disastrous conclusions.
Good advice for anyone. Next.
This one shows his commitment to intellectual honesty, especially regarding faith and science. The truth of our faith becomes a matter of ridicule among the infidels, if any Catholic. Presents as dogma what scientific scrutiny shows to be false.
Wow. So he's saying don't make faith look foolish by clinging to bad science.
Exactly. He insisted that faith must integrate with the best available knowledge. No hiding from facts. Theology shouldn't be an excuse for intellectual laziness.
That feels incredibly relevant today. And the last quote.
Back to politics.
Yeah.
An unjust law is not a law at all, but a perversion of law.
The ultimate check on power still resonates.
It really does.
So how do we take all this rich, complex thought from the 13th century and, you know, apply it, make it practical for us now?
Kerr suggests a few ways. Let's start with personal ethics.
Okay.
Instead of just focusing on a list of do's and don'ts, apply Aquinas's virtue ethics. Mm-hmm. Focus on character. Cool. By consciously trying to cultivate specific virtues, take prudence, practical wisdom. How can I make wiser decisions today? Not just follow a rule, but develop the habit of good judgment.
So thinking about who I'm becoming through my choices.
Exactly. Am I becoming more patient, more just, more courageous through my daily actions, even small ones?
That feels more holistic. What about professionally?
The natural law framework is powerful here. In any field, business, medicine, tech, especially AI ethics these days.
Big area now.
Huge. Mm. Ask, does this innovation, this policy, this business practice truly align with promoting human dignity and the common good? Does it help people flourish or does it degrade them? Use those natural law principles as a guide.
A moral compass beyond just legality or profit.
Precisely. And intellectually.
How can Aquinas help our thinking?
Adopt his model for bridging divides. Don't feel you have to choose between faith and reason or science and spirituality or even, say, your analytical side and your creative side.
See them as complementary?
Yes. Feel empowered to pursue truth wherever it leads, trusting that ultimately all truth coheres because it comes from the same source. See different ways of knowing as partners, not enemies.
That's a powerful mindset shift. So wrapping up, what was the most compelling thing for you from Kerr's portrayal of Aquinas?
For me, it really is how Kerr rescues him from being just this dry logical machine. He reveals Aquinas as this profound spiritual guide offering a coherent, integrated worldview.
Something against the fragmentation we often feel today.
Exactly. He shows that deep thinking and deep faith aren't just compatible, they actually fuel each other. That's incredibly hopeful, I think.
I agree. And for me, the big takeaway is the enduring relevance of his careful philosophical work. It's not just history.
It provides tools for today.
Absolutely. His ideas on natural law, justice, the common good, they still inform crucial debates about rights, ethics, politics. It shows how getting the foundations right, as he advised, really lasts.
Well said.
So let's leave our listeners with a final thought to chew on, building on Aquinas's ultimate aim. If the purpose of human life, artelos, is true, lasting happiness beatitudo.
That deep fulfillment.
Then Kerr, through Aquinas, prompts us to ask, how am I assessing my choices right now? Every action, every habit, every pursuit, is it actually moving me closer to that ultimate fulfillment or further away? What fundamental principles are you using, consciously or unconsciously, to guide your own pursuit of happiness?
A question worth pondering.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.